are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
And what brand underwear do you wear?
Let's see. The ones I have on right now are from Duluth Trading. They're really comfortable. Have you heard of that Duluth Trading? Yeah, and they got some really good underwear that fits me, because that's another story. You know, not all of them fit the same.
That's a whole story.
Yeah, that's a whole story, is right. Anyway, hey, listen, the reason why you're back is because, you know, you're one of those people that is so interesting to talk to. And I'm not blowing smoke up your sweats, believe me. But you're one of those people that has your energy, and you're so interesting, and you omit this a great light, great energy. I'm very drawn to that. And so I wanted you back. And I know you and I have talked since then. And I really don't know what the hell we're going to talk about today, but it doesn't matter. Whatever we end up doing is going to be great. You mentioned something about maybe talking about teaching. So
teacher-student relationship, the coaching relationship, how to take a lesson. Yeah. What are you really doing? Mind-body connection.
There you go.
Or what should men wear when they work out in Pilates, or anything?
You're on, baby. You talk about what you want to, and I'll just bounce off you. How about that?
It's good to have a starting point.
Yeah. Well, let's use action. When it comes to working out in Pilates, I didn't know if there was something. Is there a certain attire that you should wear when you're doing Pilates?
Well, we like to see as much of the body as we can.
Okay.
That's very German in seeing all the muscles. If you can see the shoulders, one's higher, you're more bound to fix it. That being said, for men would be appropriate, would be almost what you'd wear bike riding, a pair of biking shorts with a pair of shorts over that.
Right.
You know, it's nice to see the knees. It's nice to see the ankles. I'm actually wearing boxing shoes. I like to wear a little bit of a shoe when I work out on some of the equipment.
Uh-huh.
On some of the bigger pieces, Joe used to always wear boxing shoes, or even ballet shoes are good, some sort of sports shoes. And then you take your shoes off for the smaller pieces of equipment.
Okay.
Now people go hooded, and then as they warm up, they strip down.
Gotcha.
Depending on how warm or how cold the studio is.
Right, because I was going to ask you, was there a reason that you had a hoodie on? Because I'm not used to that. I just haven't done that before, but I know more and more people do that.
I'm wearing a hoodie because I'm a big, big boxing fan.
Okay.
And the boxers who train up here,
yeah.
Gennady Golovkin just fought. And, Murat Gassiev just fought, both of them won. And they train up here a lot. It's about 22 degrees outside, so it's cold.
Yeah.
So I kind of like a hoodie look, as opposed to before I used to maybe wear a turban. Now I'm kind of a hoodie.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a gym kind of look.
Yeah.
But also kind of a Star Wars kind of look.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think that's pretty cool. Now, one of the things, and again, I'm going to maybe draw some kind of a correlation in bodybuilding when I was training, as far as inside the gym, because you're mentioning that you want to see a lot of the body. In bodybuilding, it was always nice to see the muscles that you're training, because there's that connection that you start making between not only what's going on inside you, but also what you're seeing in the mirror. And that all ties into, at least from my sport, it all ties into that. The ultimate stated goal for bodybuilding is to make every repetition that you do count from the start to the finish of your workout, which is very difficult because, at least in bodybuilding, you're basically walking in fire every time you go into the gym to train for bodybuilding reasons and to compete. You put yourself into that pain. We call it walking in fire. And it was always nice to be able to see how the body works. Is that something similar to what you're talking about as far as seeing your body?
Well, the feedback that you get in the mirror, or the teacher gives you, is in symmetry. For instance, if you lay someone down and they start to do an exercise, and you see that their left pectoral is really small and their right pectoral is really big,
uh-huh.
Your eyes go to what's not symmetrical. And then you go, well, why is that? Do they have a rotation? It turns out this lady plays the cello. So this pec was really, really big.
Yeah.
And this arm was really, really big.
Yeah.
And when she worked out, she didn't want to have bigger arm muscles because she's got to hold up the bow,
right.
But bigger shoulder muscles. So then you're seeing the body, and is it occupational what they do? Is it genetic?
Yeah.
Do they want that? And then But you, if she was wearing a t-shirt, I wouldn't have been able to see that.
Right.
So you kind of say, wear as little as possible. Now, for a lot of people who are not narcissistic, that's really difficult to say, oh my God, I can't look at myself in the mirror.
Right.
And then that becomes part of building someone's self-esteem.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about like with bodybuilding and what you're saying, from a functional standpoint, because I train a lot of athletes, kind of like what you're talking about. I mean, the person that's playing that violin to a degree is an athlete in my mind, because you know, anytime the body's moving, that's considered
a performer.
They're performing, and you know, that's what happens with a lot of people in sport. Because I've had to train them to be more symmetrical and more balanced, is that they get this muscle imbalance. My kid, for example, was a really good soccer player, but he had a lot of trouble with hamstring pulls. And what would you, if you took a look at him, you saw that his quad, because of the kicking motion to kick the ball, his quad muscles were really out of balance compared to his hamstring muscle. So he was getting muscle pulls, hamstring muscle pulls, because of the imbalance of his quad. Kind of what you're saying. That
correct. Well, in that case, sometimes the athletic mind thinks it shouldn't stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I asked a guy once, I said, you know, you ride bikes, you lift weights, you play tennis, you run, but you never stretch. So you keep hurting your back and your hamstrings. Why? And he said, well, because when I stretch, I don't see anything. But when I go like that, I see a muscle.
Yeah, the show muscle.
When I stretch, I don't. Yeah. So they don't have the habit because it's not so visual.
Yeah.
But when you put it in terms of injury prevention.
Yeah.
Or recovery.
Right.
You know, so you've had a big performance and then recovering from that performance, you know, like a big sport tournament, you don't want to lose your shape, but you don't want to push your shape.
Right.
So, but it's working with performers and working with the non-performers, you know, which is the rest of the population.
Right. That's a whole different dynamic. Well, it's a different dynamic because with the athletes, in most cases, compared to the person that's not necessarily an athlete, is the athletes have a certain mindset. They develop a certain mindset because they have to in order to play in their sport or perform.
You can define it by the professional and the amateur.
Yeah.
Just someone who that's his career, they're making money, they're competing. And then someone who's either got a passion or a weekend sport, or that's their hobby.
Yeah.
Like running, biking, sailing, anything.
Right.
That's where you have kind of the difference. Are they doing it 6 hours a week or are they doing it 6 hours a day?
Right. The big difference, you know. All right. Let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
So as it related to the athlete compared to the bodybuilder, bodybuilder is I think the hard part there is that we like to see the muscles that respond and that look good. And yet we have these muscles on our body, and every bodybuilder has it, where they have weak body parts, and that changes throughout their training because certain body parts become strong ones at some point and the other ones drag a little bit. And it's always so difficult. And this is why you have to be so damn disciplined. It's always difficult to train the weaker body parts or the stubborn body parts. You just, for guys, a lot of times it was calves and it showed up on stage, but it always was very difficult. You had to have such determination and you weren't going to be deterred by the fact that you had these body parts that need to be brought up, but it takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of discipline to do that. I don't know if you found that when you're dealing with your clientele.
What it takes is a consistency. It takes a schedule. Is it 3 times a week? Is it 4 times a week? Is it 5 times a week?
Yeah.
Is it 1 hour? Is it 2 hours? How much time do you have? You know, yeah. And what are you doing with that? Are you going to the gym with a buddy and so you can do your setups quicker?
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of factors there.
Yeah. And I like, you know, Joe Pilates, there is some weights in Joe Pilates work, not big, big weights, because the boxers didn't want big, big muscles, nor did the dancers.
Right.
You know, but there is resistance with body, some extra set of arms, some extra set of triceps, weights on the equipment.
Right.
I think when you're talking about what can someone do to improve their performance, whether it's a bodybuilder, whether it's an actor, whether it's just a weekend bike rider, is how do you identify the weak parts without all the you need this, you need that, you know, which is just get them to move and doing things they normally don't do.
Yeah.
Right. Which would be one leg balance things, coordination things. The bodybuilders are so top heavy. I saw this a lot in working with the Cirque du Soleil catchers, right? They're all big because they got to catch people flying up in the air really fast. And their muscles are really big in their back and their shoulders. So when they go to roll up, their upper body's so heavy as compared to their legs.
Right, interesting. You know,
the balance is off on a curl. Yeah, so I found that really interesting.
Yeah, muscle imbalance, you know. Yeah, one of the things I did, because I watched Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think it was Pumping Iron or one of those, and he talked about going to a person who did ballet to get some training, because in bodybuilding, if you really want to show yourself off, you need to be elegant on stage and be graceful. And most bodybuilders aren't. It's horrible. Their transitions from one pose to the other are horrible. And Arnold, you know, he always talked about you're always being watched on stage, even when you're moving to the next one. So you might as well be graceful. After I saw that, I hired a ballet person. And I got to tell you something, Siri. Holy shit. She had me, the only thing she had me do was stand up like we do, like in a lineup.
Yes.
And she had me hold a piece of paper between my knees. She says, just hold it there. Holy crap, man. That was one of the hardest things I'd ever done.
That same standing exercise. Oh, they teach that a lot in Pilates. They teach that a lot in yoga. Think of the guys like at Buckingham Palace who've got to stand all day.
Oh.
Think of, you know, prisoners who have to stand and be counted. Think of waiting and standing, waiting for your water to boil.
Yeah.
Waiting for the computer to boot up. That standing does become an exercise. When you see that the boxers do it, they kind of sway a little bit from side to side.
Yeah.
So there are these exercises, standing exercises. If you were standing, I'd have you do.
Oh no, I can't stand right now. I have to sit down. I walked in here, so I got to sit down.
Okay. The standing exercises where I do these now, kind of like pandemic Pilates, I call it pandemic Pilates, because you've always got to wait on the X and be spaced. Right. I was at the hardware store, right? So there's XXX, and I have six people before I get there.
Right.
So I'm standing on the first X, and I get in my square, my hips, my shoulders, and I just sway from side to side on my feet.
Yeah.
Rather than just hang out. I'm swaying from side to side. Then I'm just lifting one foot forward and holding. Then I'm bringing it to the side. Then I'm bringing it back. Then I'm switching legs, and I'm picking one leg up, and I'm bringing it to the side, and I'm bringing it to the back. Then I bring my heels together. Now I'm doing a little bit of a squat. So I've got my inner thighs, my buttocks. I don't want to call it plie. It's not ballet.
Yeah.
I'm in a little bit of a turnout. Then I've got my feet together. I'm doing a little bit nice inner thighs, nice buttocks. And now it's time to go to the next X.
Oh, yeah.
I go to the next X and I pick up a foot and I hold it. So now I've got, and nobody cares.
Right.
So considering whatever, I have my whole pandemic Pilates on the X workout.
That's interesting.
Standing.
What a beautiful thing. You know that? You're making yourself productive. That just reminds me of making every single, you know, movement that you're making or not making, you're just being efficient that way for your body, right?
Right. So let's say here you are in your chair there, right? So this would be very Pilates in front of your box. You're waiting for your computer to boot up. Put your back into the chair. Yes, feel your shoulder blades on the chair. Put the feet on the floor totally square. Now pull your stomach into the chair so you feel your back on the chair.
Yeah.
And lift your head up just a little bit. There you go. See, right there, you've fixed something. You've changed something.
Yeah. And I'm feeling my hamstrings starting to contract. Seriously. Unbelievable. That is so cool. Okay, so here I am. I know you want to do some, you're starting to do some teaching here, but okay, here I am coming to you. And what? How would you take somebody like me? I'm 65 years of age. I happen to train. But what would you do, and what are the kinds of things that you would do with somebody like me? Or just take us and walk us through. I mean, one of the things you just did there was amazing. I like that, what you did. What would you do with somebody like myself?
You know, there's two things. One is anything hurt? We have a starting place if something hurts, and then if nothing hurts.
Right.
And is that hurt something that you've had for a while and you're living with, or is it like a new hurt?
Right.
So, example, I have someone new who's just come to me. She's very fit, except she has a back problem. They want to do surgery. I said, let's try to avoid the surgery for a while because this is not the time to go into the hospital, right?
Right.
But so the first thing I do is I have her lie down, take off the gravity. But I give her very strong springs. So we lie down and we start some very strong arms. All the muscles up and down, in and out, circles, triceps, because we build the arms to take the weight off the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we pull the stomach in, do some alternate leg lifts so she feels what ab works, adjust a little bit. And then I put her feet in the straps. So she has springs holding her legs up, outer thigh, inner thigh, outer thigh, inner thigh, outer thigh, inner thigh, different muscle groups. I have her stand up. The most important thing, of course, with her and with everyone is to listen. So as she told me about her body, she said, I feel very tight. That was what she said. That was the only information she really gave me. So that was also a starting place. She felt tight. So we started up here with the legs, stretching them. I don't know if you can see when I go way up here.
Yeah.
But I have a place here to stretch her where she can hold on. And I have a place here to stretch her where she can hold on. So we start with big stretches on the legs, front, back, and side of the legs. That makes her feel better, frees up some energy, start a little bit of posture work. Strong springs on the arms, strong springs on the legs. Then I put her on this one, which is for posture, because it's just a pole with some springs on it. Because she leans over people, right? The head comes forward and that causes the back to round and that causes this to spasm.
Yeah.
So the most important thing you can give someone is posture muscles, just defying gravity. So here I put her on a pipe, the pole, and it shows her where her head belongs. If the head doesn't belong here,
right,
the head belongs here. And so the equipment gives her the feedback of the position she should be in. So then while she's all really standing tall with her stomach in, then we work the arms without any anything like with her back fully supported in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
So here she'll leave the pole if she leaves her stomach. So that's what they call, I don't really like to call it the core. Joe might have called it the powerhouse. I like the word trunk,
mm-hmm,
just to not overuse things. But it's the correction of where she is standing, walking, and sitting that will also help reinforce the work we do in the studio.
That's important because, you know, as an athlete, what we end up, what ends up happening to athletes, I'm going to use a baseball player as the example, a hitter. All of a sudden, and it's a very slow process sometimes, you start developing a bad habit. Like this lady, it's not a bad habit necessarily, but it sounds like based on her work, she does a lot of leaning forward. And athletes, when they start doing just a small thing, maybe like the hitter, maybe he drops his elbow down where he didn't used to. That creates a bad habit. And in some cases, it creates a situation that exposes that athlete to injury. And it sounds like, you know, what you're doing with that person is making them aware of where they are in space all the time. That's kind of my point, right?
Correct. And then giving the muscles to support it.
Right.
And then because the work, because Joe Pilates was a gymnast, and so a lot of the work is based on that tumbling and balance and tumbling that comes from the circus work. It also does a lot for your proprioception. So when you ask people what anything that concerns you, and yes, my balance concerns me. Let's say they had a stroke. Let's say they had a broken leg. Let's say they just have a balance problem.
Yeah.
And so there's so many exercises on just one leg, holding on, not holding on, where you can determine that strengthen the left side over the right side, or strengthen this over that. I find that a lot of people who've had injuries go to physical therapy, but never fully complete their physical therapy, their rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And then they compensate.
Right.
Normal people, just normal population, compensate just holding a baby on a hip.
Yeah.
Holding everything on one side.
Yeah.
You see yourself driving in a car. So this position here, if you go back on the chair again, which you're just squaring off your shoulders over your hips, pull your abdomen in, bring your head back. When you're driving and you find yourself, you know, slumped over on the thing like this, you're driving for hours every day or whatever, you're cramping and reducing. So this brings you back to, this is what the body should look like, symmetrical, that Greek idea that beauty is symmetry.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, I'm that guy in the car that's always driving like what you're saying constantly.
Good. Well, this lesson must be for you. But the performance part of the Greeks and the Romans and the wrestling and the bodybuilding and showing off the anatomy and God's beauty in the human male and female bodies is one thing. And then getting people to have some sort of technique when everybody, this took a long time ago when the Industrial Revolution came and everybody moved to the cities, right? Mm-hmm. When you lived down the country, you didn't need to go to a gym. You had horses, you were plowing, you were, you know, just here in Big Bear, shoveling the snow, raking the leaves, you know, what you do outside. A housewife burns 800 calories if she was to clean her own house, you know.
Yeah.
But once you're in the city, you're taken out of nature. And so then these indoor gyms came up, where we used to go to a gym. And now in the pandemic, we're back in our own homes.
True that, huh?
So fortunately, I have all my equipment. I mean, I don't have a couch, but I have, well, Pilates machines in my house. But whatever habit you've developed, whatever, if you've bodybuilt for years and years and years, if you went to dance, if you went to yoga, if you played tennis, did you have a physical habit, you know, something you can do at home? Now everybody's doing it's getting more modern with the Peloton and with the mirrors.
Right.
That doesn't really correct. If you still have a bad habit, if you're still knock-kneed, if you're still bow-legged, if you're still hyperextended, if you're still scoliotic, you know, if you've got a scoliosis, you don't fix it. And the correcting and the fixing is what's important. And that's why you might have a coach.
Right. And you know, the thing about it is correcting something, like, you're totally right with that stuff. And I did a post one time and I said, you know, there's nothing that really replaces a coach or a trainer in front of you for the very reasons that you're talking about. Because it's okay, and it's another option, and that's fine with this pandemic, and they have this, you know, these trainers in front of you, in front of a mirror. But like you said, unless you already have good habits, you're going to come in with bad habits, and they're going to get worse, not better.
I do find that you can give lessons in the Zoom and this and that if it is a one-on-one.
Yeah.
You can still see if somebody's, you know, it's amazing what you can see.
Yeah.
Especially if you have something, if you have the equipment to compare it to, I know it's straight is, or the chair. It's amazing what's happening in the cyber world, but I don't believe that things should be too group, you know. I think there's a lot of, and for that reason, we can say that the pandemic is kind of equalizing a lot of things that were maybe not healthy. For instance, group spin classes. You used to spin with a heart rate monitor at a certain pace when Johnny G invented it back in the Schwinn days.
Mm-hmm.
And now they just make it dark, or they must just do it hard or a higher heartbeat. It's not geared for that person's cardio fitness, that person's, you know, age or mentality.
Right.
Things should be very specific but I don't specifically like going, I don't like to use the O word, the A word, like just because you're that age, then you should be at that level.
Right.
Taking into consideration, because a 20-year-old could be in terrible shape.
True. Well, and here's the thing, what you're talking about is that when it comes to cardio, for example, it is age dependent. I'm not telling you something you don't know, but it is age dependent. And just because you go harder doesn't mean that you're going to get more benefit, because what happens physiologically is if you go too hard, your body switches from aerobic conditioning, which is where it's burning fat as its main energy source, to anaerobic conditioning, where it's burning sugar. So, and this is the reason why people get so damn frustrated, because they think that going harder is better when it comes in regard to doing cardio. And that's not the case.
Correct. Harder's not better. Faster's not better.
Right.
It's shinier. If it's newer, it's not better. Right, just exactly. Invented, it's not better.
Yeah. And that's kind of your point. And the, I call it follow the leader training, where I see groups sometimes are, you know, 15, 20 people, they're following the leader, which is the instructor. And, you know, that kind of training is, it might work for us. A very small segment of people out there, but the rest of them are not going to get the same you know, kind of benefit. That's going to what you're saying.
Well, fitness is so much more, there's so much more information on it now. People have such a bigger experience the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully people use it intelligence, and you don't really want someone who's already kyphotic riding a bike a lot, because they're already locked into that hunch.
Yeah.
You know, so what are all the extension exercises? You can just add in, you know, kind of like diets or supplements or vitamins, a few things that that person could use for their personal life.
Yeah.
For instance, the mat exercises in Pilates were done, like I spoke last podcast, in the prison. You can do exercises in bed. Like, you get up, you can't sleep. It's 3 a.m. You can't go back to sleep. You have your choices. Turn on the TV, look at the bad news. Or you could do these 5 or 6 or 8 exercises, and then you feel a little bit better, and then you'd be able to maybe calm down and go to sleep.
Yeah, good point. You know, I want to point something out to you, and I learned this when I was over in Eastern Europe training with the Bulgarians. They were very ahead of, about 8 years ahead of us as far as application in this lifting, you know. And one of the things that they talked about was they said that stretching is a waste of energy, because you teach your body what you want it to do. And again, I'm not saying that stretching is a bad thing. I'm not. I'm just trying to point out a different point of view. And because I was very suspicious about that when they said that, because I was that guy that did a couple of warm-up sets and then actually got into what we call the working set. And they said, you're wasting your time, because your body, your physiology, it adapts to its environment. And so it can be ready on demand. In other words, what they were saying. And I tell you, I came back and tried it, and I, over time, that worked for me. But I also see the value of stretching. And I'm wondering what's your thought on that? I mean, okay, so the Bulgarians said this, they were emphatic about it. Don't warm up. Like, even if you had like a pulled muscle, they would say do active recovery, but don't ever, unless the muscle's pulled off the bone, you should never stop training. You switch it from being all out to an active recovery, because it recruits red blood cells and oxygen, and that's a natural healer. So what would be your take on that, and how could we maybe implement your stretching that you're talking about into training?
I think that's part of the Bulgarian culture, and part of that part of, you know, Eastern Europe, that kind of training. And they're also doing it for the bodybuilding. They're doing it for something sports specific.
True.
So it's not a one size fit all. It's always like, what is your goal?
Right.
Or who are you? Or what else do you have in your life or you don't have in your life?
That's a good point, you know, because I never really thought about that, but it really is more specific to, I think, athletics.
It's more specific to athletics. So when you're looking at, for instance, something like yoga, then the consciousness is very much involved. In bodybuilding, the consciousness is about on the muscle, right?
Yeah.
In yoga, you're trying to achieve a neutral mind, not a critical mind, and a mind that can transcend. So that holding of a posture with long, deep breathing for a long extended time puts your mind through changes. But you can apply that same technique to something like Shotokan karate, right? Mm-hmm. I have a background in Shotokan, and we used to do horse dances, and we used to do a horse dance and hold it for an hour and a half in our special meetings. And that was the developed, that was to develop that samurai mentality. Of course, I'm a white woman. I didn't get there. But I got a great butt from it, and I got a great willpower from it, right?
Yeah.
So in that case, they're using one position, not a stretch, but a position to build enormous strength, but to take the body and the mind beyond where it's ever been before to prove that you can go there.
Yeah.
But that's under the tutorage of a long, legendary lineage of yoga karate masters.
Right.
So it depends. I think you should be able to, as you go through life, take the best of whatever.
Right.
Like, for instance, maybe when you're young, you can eat and drink everything. But when you get older, you can't drink that much or eat what you used to eat. So it's, what techniques do you have that would go with you forever and ever?
Yeah, good point. And
what is the mind doing? So it's nice in the bodybuilding, again, you go to the gym, you see the weights, you see the other people, you see the routine, you got your legs on this days and your arms on that days. And so that discipline, I'm sure, is home with you now.
Absolutely. It's so instilled in me. It's almost works against me sometimes.
So it's what should people do? But I think it has to be with their personality and their lifestyle.
Yeah. I have a question for you. When you say that you want to get back to, and you're thinking, I guess is what you said, you want to get back to neutral. Is that what you said?
Bring the mind to neutrality. Yes.
Mind to neutrality. Can you tell me, maybe you did, but can you break it down even further as far as what you mean by that?
Yes. So a negative mind would be, oh, I'm really fat, and I might as well just kill myself.
Oh, okay.
A positive mind would be like, girl, you're looking good, and that guy's checking you out.
Right.
And then neutral is in between. You're not tearing yourself down, and you're not picking yourself up. You're not criticizing, and you're not grandizing. You're just, your mind is neutral.
Well, how do you do that? I don't know if I can do that. I'm always fighting against myself. How do you do that, damn it?
yeah definitely. Well, that's you know,
I mean, seriously, it's like I've tried to like not think, like have a thought, see how long I can go without having a thought, and I can't do that.
Right. You have to give the mind something else to do rather than think. You're either making it think on something, or let's say something like, I mean, like you're gonna fill up a pool with a hose. Right there, you're just watching the water.
Is that considered neutrality right there?
That's considered concentration.
Okay.
But it brings your attention into something. So when you're introducing someone to bodybuilding or Pilates or any physical technique, the mind is learning something new, just like it has to learn the piano.
Yeah.
Mind is learning something new. And so the mind is not on itself. It's not criticizing itself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the whole thing with the mind-body connection, right? And today it's more important than ever, because today you've got the social media, you've got the onslaught of everybody thinks they're a celebrity and wants to be a celebrity. So if that doesn't fulfill them, you have the depression.
Right.
You know, you have all the pot and all the drugs. So you're not sure what clean is, because you're going up or you're going down.
Yep.
You need your coffee or you need your wine, or you're not sure how you feel, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, for me, I've had a lot of different great teachers. That's been my fortune, and I've been able to disappear in the yoga path, or disappear in the Japanese culture, or disappear in the Pilates culture. And I've never had a sport. So when we need people to inspire us, you know, we need those Olympic champions. We need those heroes. We need those people who are not couch potatoes. We need that.
Right.
And so the boxers have inspired me, because you get to see how one person works so hard. You can't be a performer or a success without working. And we need to say, I need to work more, and not just, oh, it's 20 minutes three times a week and that's all you need.
Right.
Because it's not.
Well, and as a, when you get to a point in bodybuilding, Tom Platz taught me this. You get to a point in bodybuilding. In fact, I just shot a video yesterday. It was an example of my current training sort of regimen at this age. But the thing about it is, when you're really aware of what's going on inside and the muscles and everything, that you know that just because you have written down or you plan on doing 3 sets of 10, for example, that doesn't mean that you're going to do 3 sets of 10. If you're really in tune with your body, because there's going to be those days where you feel great and you just keep on going to your point, instead of just doing 20 minutes, you just keep on going because your body has more that day, because it's always in flux, right?
Well, not only that, but before we used to not have enough time, and now we have so much time.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. It's like,
that's true. A lot more than we used to, it seems like.
Yeah. You got to fill up the day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I would think that, I mean, could you, when you're trying to teach somebody how to be in a neutrality, if I'm saying that correctly, is that like a class in itself? Like, are you training people just to learn how to be really effective at being in that neutral zone?
If that's what they want, if they need more mental training or meditation or something like that,
yeah.
you still use the body to reach the mind. You're still educating the will, using the will to reach the mind.
I like that, what you're saying there, because I would almost think that it all, because I've said this before, it starts in the mind and it filters down, but you're actually saying that in a different way, I think, where your body has to reach your mind. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, using the body to reach the mind. The education of the body to increase the willpower.
Interesting.
The education of the body to increase the willpower. So the person has very bad willpower, right?
Yeah.
And so now you're going to do the willpower of, I want you to do these, and I want you to do those, and I want you to do this, and now you're going to do this, and oh, I can't do that, and now you can do that. And so you're more confident. You've increased your willpower.
Right.
Right? So now, between now and the end of the day, I don't want you to eat any sugar, and I want to make sure you drink one or two glasses of water and try to go to bed when you're tired. You've increased your willpower in adding in some lifestyle techniques.
Right.
That's a big problem, is willpower.
Yeah, you know, and what I tell people, like in the fitness industry, I tell them, look, this is, and it can come off a little bit, maybe overwhelming to the person that, because we're, you know, in our society especially, we want things fast, really fast. We want satisfaction fast, results fast. And I tell people, I said, you know, the most important thing is to take baby steps and realize that, you know, it's a process. And when you're getting yourself back into whatever kind of condition or whatever you're trying to reach as a goal, it's a process and it's a marathon, not a sprint, and take baby steps, because at the end of the day, that's what it's going to take to get the big goal and to be able to maintain that, because so many people, they got fire in their rear end when they first start something and they go like hell. And the next thing you know, they're burnt out. They're disappointed because they don't think they've gotten the results that they should have. And they go this way, you know, and then they get on this bad, bad roller coaster ride. So I think that's kind of what you're saying.
Well, I think that's where the coaching experience comes in.
Yeah.
And the commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you make a commitment, so for instance, you pay for 3 months of personal training and you've paid that money and you said, I'm going to show up at 7 o'clock in the morning, 3 days a week.
Yeah.
So you make a commitment to someone else.
Right.
A lot of it is what is a person's personality within the ability to work with that personality? Are they competitive? Are they solo? Do they do better in a group?
Right.
Do better in the morning? Do they do better in the afternoon? You know, but it's to have that one-on-one or group experience, you know. So if, let's say for me, my problem, let's talk about my problems now. But I live in an extraordinary mountain range. Right? Pacific Coast Trail, enormous hiking. So I can go for a walk on the trail, but if you come to see me or someone else, I'm like, I'm going to take you for a walk, man. Yeah. And we're going to like walk.
Yeah.
I'm not just going for a walk. We're going to go for a walk.
Right.
So you can do it for someone else. You can get it up to do it for someone else.
Yeah.
You can get it up. You know, you show up, I'll show up.
Right.
Together we will do this, you know? Yeah. It's like going to the dentist. You go to the dentist says, look, this is your program. You got to floss. You got to try the Invisalign. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, but if you do that, you're going to have a beautiful smile. If you don't do that, you're going to stay the same.
Right.
It's a program and it's a discipline, but you've committed to someone who has a big experience in it.
Right. Makes sense. You know, it's kind of funny because like you're talking about paying for something. When I first started doing personal training, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing, I had to learn this as I went along, you know. So you'd be my client, and I just said, well, just pay me after the 12 sessions or whatever sessions that you bought. Well, when I started having people pay me up front, automatically I got a better client because of that commitment that you're talking about. They just didn't feel that sense of commitment if they thought, oh, well, I'll just pay them when I get done. And consequently, what happened, and I thought I was pretty good at motivating people, but still, the point is, the minute they started putting money down, and I would say put it all up front, I didn't get some people, but the ones I got, they were good clients.
Right, and you as a coach showed up, whereas some coaches don't show up.
True.
It's just like going to school. You've signed up for a course, and you expect at the end of those 10 weeks that you will be more accomplished. I expect If you come to my course 3 times a week, at the end of 10 weeks, you're going to be more flexible, more coordinated, have better balance, sleep better, less anxiety, you know, tighter butt, flatter stomach.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, okay. So let's transition a little bit if we will. And if it's not that important, that's fine too. Okay. I know that in training that diet is also important. Some people say that diet is 85%. I've heard these, you know, that's like the most important. I disagree with that. There's three components in when it comes to training athletes or anybody for that matter. It comes down to three components: resistance training or weight training, cardio, and nutrition. Those are the three components that you need to manipulate throughout a program. And it's a question of what your particular goal is. So I don't think that one is necessarily that much better than the other. However, I think diet is important to a degree. So with regard to the kind of teaching that you do you find that it's I will get a better result if my diet is such, or how do you think that works for you?
I think it's a cultural thing. Although I have my style, again, when you work with different people, let's take the boxers, for example. You've got someone from Africa, you got someone from Louisiana, you got someone from Ukraine, you got someone from Kazakhstan, you got someone from Ossetia. Each one of them has a different diet. Each one of them has, like the Bulgarians, have a different idea of how they should eat for what they're doing.
Right.
Some coaches, like Abe Sanchez, you know, he's Mexican. He's like, doesn't matter what you eat what you eat. Other coaches will bring in a complete nutritional thing and every calorie will be accounted for. So when you're dealing with someone who's super professional, there's other factors in it, like their background. If you're dealing with an actress who's getting ready for a role, that's different than just a mother. You know, so you have to find how many changes you can make in there. I go gentle, like adding one good thing in and taking one bad thing out.
Yeah.
And that one good thing could just be like ginger. You got a bad back, just put some ginger in there. You know, can't sleep, some CalMag. Just one good thing in and one bad thing out. Because you have to control the entire environment otherwise. They have to move in with you, or you have to be on location, or you have to be in a retreat center. Yeah. Yeah, that's why a lot of the people come to Big Bear, because there's not a lot of restaurants here. There's not a lot of things to do at night. There's no entertainment. Town closes at night. So you can't get any trouble here, you know?
Yeah.
Can't, you know, we do have gelato though.
Yeah.
But so it depends. It totally depends. And it depends. That's why I try to use a little psychology and a little astrology with people. Do you want to give up your drinking? Because that's a lot of calories right there. Yeah. Do you want to go on a fast? Do you need a protein drink? It depends how much, you know, when they come in, how much they need. If they've got a beautiful body, I don't mention it at all. They may mention it.
Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you are definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Yeah. I think the smartest thing that you just said is, and this is a difference between, in my view, my opinion, between great coaches and the ones that aren't so great, and you're a coach and I'm a coach, is that, you know, you're not making somebody do this, my style or this style or nothing, because that doesn't work. And you pointed out the reasons why, and the fact that you're aware of that and you're smart enough to work around that and make them productive, that goes a long way.
Thank you. I actually think it does work, but it attracts a certain type of person that I don't like to work with. So
right.
I like people too. You tend to, I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, the synchronicity of the universe or what, you tend to draw towards you people who think like you.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even think of doing something. They would just go get surgery.
Right.
Like, yeah. Why invest a couple $1,000s in your body when you can just go have your fat sucked out?
Right. There's that
group. So it's a certain type of person.
Right.
I love teenagers, you know, because they're very open and their bodies are still open and you can make a big difference in there.
Yeah.
And I love people who've had injuries and who are a little bit of afraid, so I can get them more functional.
Yeah. That's always nice to see when you turn somebody around like that.
Yeah, but really right now for this time, a lot of it is just, you know, you start this work for yourself. How can you survive, or how can you change? How can you be better and stronger and live longer and be happier?
Yeah.
And then if somebody doesn't have something like that, they don't have a passion or something, they could be a swimmer in their backyard and pool and be fine.
That's right. I mean, it's not, you don't just have to be an athlete. I get that too. You know, but I just, like I said, you know, the thing about what you're saying is when you have a business, like I have personal training studio, you don't always get that group that is just, they have a mindset of a warrior. You don't get that. You have to work with a lot of other people and make them productive as well. And I actually found it more challenging for me, and probably more satisfying, to take that person that wasn't the athlete, that didn't think they could do this. And then my challenge is to make them productive and make them change and make them change how they feel about themselves. That for me, I think that made me feel better than any athlete that I've ever trained, to be honest with you.
It's always rewarding.
Yeah, it really is. And my clientele, and I've told them so many times, I said, you don't understand, because they've given me lots of compliments. And, oh, you changed my life and all this. I tell them, you've inspired me. And just as much as I have you, you just have to know that, because seeing you come in like this little flower that was all bunched up like this, and then watch them, you know, bloom and change right before my eyes. I mean, I got so much out of that I learned from them too.
I've lived long enough now that I have some students who have kept the habit of the stretching, you know, things like hip openers.
Yeah.
You know, back stretching, you know, performers, actors, people who travel a lot, who are on sets for long times. And they're very glad that they spent that time learning how to take care of themselves, how to stretch your back, you know. Yeah.
Well, some techniques. And that says something about you, because, you know, the thing about it is, and I'll just speak for myself, I'm so lucky that I found bodybuilding, or it found me, whichever way that worked out, because it saved my life. You know, even though it may have had something to do with me having strokes 8 years ago because of the extreme behavior, but it's the very same thing that I needed to get me back to where I'm at right now. And, you know, I'm in the best shape that I've been in at least 10 years, maybe 15 years. And it would have never happened if I didn't have that mindset, and that where it's a lifelong experience for me, and it'll always be that way. And I know that.
Well, remember, you probably were growing up with Jack LaLanne.
Yes, I was. I did.
Right? Jack LaLanne, who was really the first fitness guru on TV.
That's right.
You know, with his little white dog, and then swimming across the channel in New York City. And,
yeah.
You know, so again, that was an example of somebody who was happy and inspiring people in the media.
Yeah, he was way ahead of his time, wasn't he?
He was way ahead of his time, yeah. Man.
Did you ever meet him? Yeah. I did. I met him they had a Legends dinner years ago, and Bill Pearl, some of the giants in the industry were there. Jack LaLanne was there. And I'm going to tell you something, Sherry. He was, at that time, he was 75 years old, and that sucker was running around that room like a young man, just socializing with everybody. He had more energy than all of us did.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I had heard, I don't know if this is true, that he was the one who started using the pulleys, although Joe Pilates' original reformer, he has a pulley system in the 20s, and then he went to springs. But that pulley system that Jack LaLanne invented, all that, but he never patented it. So all of that equipment he never made any money on, and then that's when he started with the Jack LaLanne juicer.
Yeah.
His last couple decades there.
Yeah.
And that's where he made his fortune. Was on that Jack LaLanne juicer.
Yeah, I remember that. Man, that guy was amazing. I couldn't believe that. That stands out in my my mind at times. I think about that, you know, and he had so much energy back then. Listen, before we go off into the wild blue yonder, is there anything that you wanted to cover that I didn't go into? If so, why don't you enlighten us some more before we go?
Wow.
Oh, I like it when I stump you, Siri.
Wow, I'm usually not...
Wait, this is a moment here. No, I'm kidding. No, I wanted to make sure I just didn't like step all over you and like maybe you wanted to cover something, that's all.
No. I'm someone who put it in front of me and I will respond to it.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, so I'll wind this thing up. Are you currently, what is your exercise program? How does that look Monday through Friday before we head out here?
My exercise program right now is pretty much with the applied equipment because we're indoors in the wintertime, a pandemic. So I find if I lie in bed watching TV too long that I get all.
Oh, yeah.
So I go every day and stretch, and every day I do something because it's right there.
Yeah,
sort of like if you were to walk by a bowl of cookies, you'd eat one.
Right.
So I tend to use my equipment, and I do a lot of stuff outside. Like right now, I'm shoveling snow, so that takes care of my cardio and my strength work because that driveway was.
Yeah.
I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's just normal functioning things.
Yeah.
And as
far as your Pilates and things like that, using your equipment, would you say that you spend maybe an hour a day, 4 hours a week? What would you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I do. And, you wake up and it's like 22 degrees out and you don't really want to go out till it's 40.
Right. I can see that.
Right. So you either got to watch what's happening in politics or go do something. And then my other big thing I'd like to give people is going to sleep at night. You know, really the way to go to sleep at night and the ability to immediately bring your focus onto your breathing. And there's a lot of techniques in breathing. I've been using, for instance, the Our Father prayer, or you can use a count, 10 in, 10 out, and you give yourself a goal, like I'm going to do 10 breaths with the 10 count, 10 second count, or something like that.
Yeah.
You never get beyond 5 before you fall asleep.
So you're telling me that that actually helps you go to sleep, really? Because is that taking that your attention away from something? Is that part of being
missing? Yes, that's taking away from Netflix and Criminal Minds
and
everything. And then I'm just, first is the pure pleasure of my sheets and my pillow and my blankets. And then I'm feeling my breath in my nostrils, watching my breath going in and out, counting as my breath goes in and out. If I'm still awake a minute and a half, then I will start a prayer or start something. I tell prayers because that's something that people have the habit of.
Right.
And so it's easy for them to say if they have a prayer in whatever language it is.
Yeah.
And your mind gets focused on bringing your brain activity down. And then I can usually fall asleep.
That's interesting. You know, at times I used to sleep like a dead person when I was younger. And as I've gotten older, you know, I don't sleep as well. However, I'm sleeping better now than I used to, but I don't know if it has to do with, my mind sometimes, I get the feeling that you're the same way and maybe you're not, but my mind, when I get onto something like a new thing, it's a creative act that I get into. And when I go to bed sometimes, Siri, I'll go right to sleep and then I'll wake up at 1 o'clock or, 12 o'clock at night or in the morning, I am wide ass awake and I just can't get back to sleep. And so I'm going to try doing that because it's frustrating because I get up at 3 a.m. That's just my routine. So when I'm up at midnight, that really pisses me off because I know in a few hours I got to get up and go do my thing, you know, and train. And I like to be rested, but it blows me away. And I got a feeling it's just because I have something going on and my mind hasn't fully shut down, I guess, when I went to sleep, even though I went right to sleep. It's kind of weird that way.
Well, you just have to make sure, again, you just check your day, you know, are you having caffeine past 3 o'clock? You know, are you going to bed with a full stomach? Is it physiological?
Yeah.
Is it mental? And then what do you do to put yourself back to sleep? And what is it that's keeping you up? But for instance, some people can't sleep unless there's noise. For me, if there's any amount of noise, I go to my mom's, there's a train, can't sleep.
Right.
If there's lighter noise, I like complete sensory deprivation to go to bring myself down.
Really quiet then, is that what you're saying?
Really quiet, really dark.
Yeah, for me, because I've been used to it. I used to sleep in my grandma's house. We didn't have air conditioning at that point. She had like a swamp cooler in the hallway. And, you know, it was hot as hell. But in the day, I'd go in there like at lunchtime because I'd go take a nap. You know, back then I was working on the dairy. And at noon, we'd go home, eat, take a little nap. I'd lay underneath that swamp cooler. And I must have been from that because in my bedroom, I sleep with two fans. I sleep with a commercial fan. That is a loud one, not terribly loud, but you would think that it's probably terribly loud. So that one's over there on the side blowing this way. And then I have the ceiling fan blowing down on me. If I don't sleep those suckers on, I think it's just something that you get used to, you know?
I can give you this technique that of listening to the fans, because it's a matter of listening.
Yeah.
Rather than to your thoughts. You're going to listen to the fan on your breath. I'm just going to inhale 1, 2, 3. Okay. 4, 5, 6, 7, go to 8, go down to 8. As you listen to the fan, counting on your fingers, you let me know if you get to 10.
I'm going to do that, seriously, because I really value my sleep now, you know. Well, listen, once again, you've been fantastic and amazing. I really do enjoy.
I've loved your visit. Thank you so much. And so many of my friends and students enjoyed the last podcast. I know there was a couple hundred people who loved it.
Beautiful. Anytime you want to come back on and teach us something, I'm down.
Yeah, when you invite me, I'm back. I'm here.
Okay, sounds good.
Happy New Year from Big Bear.
Take care. I hope to see you soon.
Ciao, ciao. From Siri Dark.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.